the Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon on a Big 550 KTRS. I am Paul Harris. Max Foisy is here for the showbiz segment of the show today. Ian and Dan are both out of town with Frank on the... Well, no, Ian's actually in town. He had a staycation. But Dan is in the Dominican Republic with Frank. They'll all be back together again on Monday. Tim is here filling in for Dan. And it's time for the showbiz stuff today. And we have three movies to review. And then we'll also tell you who is going to win the Academy Awards so you don't have to watch the show on Sunday night.
You don't have to watch the show, but you should. Shameless plug. Follow me on Twitter at MaxTheMovies, because I'll be live tweeting the whole entire 15-hour show. I'll be shunning my family.
Really?
My wife and my child will not see me on Sunday evening because I'll be making dumb jokes the entire time.
Okay.
You don't even have to be watching the Oscars. It's a fun film.
I might even tweet back at you at Paul
fantastic.
Harris Show.
Wonderful. Look at that.
We'll do some of that. But before we get to the Oscars, let's talk about the movies that are opening this weekend. And you've seen two of them, so why don't you open up with the one that I think is probably going to do best at the box office, and that's the Jordan Peele movie, Get Out.
Yes, let's talk about Get Out, which is the directorial debut from Jordan Peele. He's known as a part of the comedy duo Key and Peele. And over the past 5 or 6 years, I've noticed that Keegan-Michael Key has had a cameo in as much as I can wager every single film released in the last 5 years. You watch Tomorrowland, look, it's Keegan-Michael Key. He just pops up, and I started thinking, what is Jordan Peele doing? Because you just didn't see him a whole lot. Turns out he was writing this script. And so he wrote and directed Get Out, which is a horror film, a scary, dark thriller that also turns out to be quite funny. So he's done something remarkable with this movie, where he gives you the chills and the tension and the scares, but he also makes you laugh a whole lot. And there's not too many movies that can achieve both of those.
But it's not a parody of horror movies like Scream and some of those others, right?
No, it's not even as much of a parody of the genre as something like Evil Dead, you know, which is sort of goofy and you can laugh at it. Both the humor and the scares, it's not just like set up punchline or set up, you know, cat in the cupboard jump scare. It's all contextual. It's all about what's happening. And there's a lot of social commentary in this movie too. He's compared this movie, you know, you always have to do the pitches, like we saw in The Player, where somebody comes in and says, oh, it's, you know, it's Welcome Back, Cotter meets Jaws, or whatever. Well, this movie is Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, crossed with The Stepford Wives.
Okay.
And that'll tell you a little bit about what's going on in
How much
out.
Of the plot can you tell us without giving anything away?
I really don't want to say too much. What I can talk about is how, you've got a character named Chris Washington, played by, Daniel, don't have his name.
I'll find it. You go on.
Thank you so much.
Go ahead.
Get Out. I'm going to have it right here. I should know Daniel's name. Daniel Kaluuya, who in a star-making performance, this kid is going to be a giant, giant star. He's really good. He's dating Allison Williams. That's Brian Williams' daughter. She's in the HBO show Girls.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been dating for a couple months, and now it's come time for them to go meet her parents.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there is probably no more awkward time in a new relationship than when you have to meet the in-law.
Mm-hmm.
We've all had very frightening experiences that are very awkward with stilted conversations.
I don't know what you're talking about. My in-laws are wonderful. I had no problem with them ever.
But in the case of this movie, he's got extra apprehension because she has not mentioned to her parents that he's black. And she's like, don't worry about it. My folks aren't racist. Everything's going to be fine. But he's got a little bit of apprehension. He goes up to their stately manor. And her parents are played by Catherine Keener, who's just one of the best.
Yes.
And Bradley Whitford, who is having a ball with this role. And they go out of their way to make him feel comfortable. They give him hugs. They tell him that they would have voted for Obama for a third term if they could have.
Mm-hmm.
And he's kind of just sort of wincing and smiling like, okay, white people, I'm sure it's fine.
You don't have to bring up the race thing all the time.
And
that's actually what's making me uncomfortable here.
And he gets more uncomfortable when he meets their groundskeeper and their maid, both of whom are black, and both of whom seem to just be a little off. They're a little too happy to be there in service of this family. From there, the tension grows, and I don't want to say too much more, but it becomes a pretty frightening film. Jordan Peele is obviously a fan of John Carpenter's Halloween. There's a lot of imagery from that movie, and even takes a little bit from an H.P. Lovecraft story called The Thing on the Doorstep. So those of you who've read that, which is about maybe one person in the audience, knows exactly where this story is going. But again, I was struck by how funny it was and how it's, you know, both comedy and horror have to have the audience fill in the gaps, either with laughs or screams. And he's able to do both of those with this movie. I feel like this is his 10th or 11th movie. He's that assured as a director. I've rarely seen a first movie. I'm thinking of like Reservoir Dogs. When you saw that, you thought Tarantino had been making movies for 20 years. Mm-hmm. Same thing. Jordan Peele's got a long career ahead of him. This movie does have a lot to say and a lot to unpack about race issues. It's doing it with the trappings of genre, so that's a little easier.
So it doesn't hit you over the head with that?
Yeah, I think it hits you over the head with a bloody mallet. And so you might be having some fun with it. And then later on, hopefully, you'll have a huge conversation about the different things that the movie brings up. I love this movie, and you know what's funny? I didn't love it right away. It was much more of a dark comedy than a straight scary movie, and I was expecting from the trailers for it to be much more horror-based. And so when it was over, I was sort of lukewarm on it, and it is stuck with me for the past week. And I keep going back and thinking about what it has to say, and it's grown in my estimation since then. So I highly recommend it.
Is that going to do well at the box office this weekend?
Guess what? He made it with Blumhouse, you know, the low-budget horror company, which I think Blumhouse will go down almost like Orion Films.
Is that the company that does, like, Paranormal Activity and those kind of movies?
Yeah, and, you know, Insidious and all of these movies. The budget on this is $4 million.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like he probably gave two of that to Allison Williams and then made the movie for the rest. So, yes, it's already made its budget back. It's going to do very well.
What do you give it on a scale of 10?
Ah, I forgot we're doing this. I'll give Get Out an 8 or 9. How about that? How about an 8? I'll give it an 8.
You can go 8.5 if you want.
Can we do halves?
Yeah.
I'm new. Let's do 8.5.
Okay.
Again, who's writing this down? Am I supposed to keep
it? I'm writing it down.
Okay. 8.5.
Yeah. And you do need, I mentioned to you the other day, you need to keep track of the ones that you love and you hate the most this year so that we can do an end of the year recap back over them.
Let's do it. Fantastic.
All right. The movie I want to talk about, it's interesting. That's about an interracial couple. I also have a movie about an interracial couple. It's called A United Kingdom. It is about a guy by the name of Seretse Khama, who was a prince of Bechuana land, which at the time in the late 40s when the movie starts was a protectorate of Britain.
Hmm.
Now we know it better as independent Botswana land, but at the time it was Bechuana land. He is a student in London and meets a young white woman, and they start a relationship and they get married, and that causes an international crisis. The Brits won't have it because they, of course, are overseeing it during that whole British colonial period of the mid 20th century. Meanwhile, back in Botswana land, Seretse's uncle, who has been pretty much acting like the king because Seretse's father, who was the king, died when Seretse was very, very young. And so they didn't put him on the throne, but they let his uncle be the regent, as it was called. And so he effectively has been running the country for a long time. But he's been training Seretse to become the king of this country. And now he does not want him to ascend to the throne with a white woman as his queen.
Aha.
And so you've got the international conflict there. Now, Seretse is played by David Oyelowo, who has emerged in the last few years as one terrific actor. He was Oscar nominated for playing Dr. Martin Luther King in Selma. I loved him last year in The Queen of Katwe, the little chess movie that Disney made.
Yes, yeah.
He was very, very good in that. He is compelling. He is magnetic in this role. And Rosamund Pike, who you may remember from Gone Girl, is very good as the white woman, Ruth Williams, who falls in love with him and marries him and accepts the fact that this is not going to be a normal life. She's never been to Bechuana land. She accepts the engagement by the banks of the Thames in London. And then he essentially says, I have to go home and be the king.
By the way.
Yeah.
He's like, by the way, I'm going to go be the king.
I have to go be the king. I wouldn't do that without you, without the woman I love. So it's that love story that's there. But the movie also exposes British imperialism for how damaging it really was in Africa. And we know what it's done in the Middle East, where the Brits just, you know, carved up areas and called them a country. And that's how you get the warring factions in Iraq and Iran and all the rest of that stuff. But the same was true in Africa, particularly in southern Africa, where South Africa, the Republic of South Africa, was in the throes of the deepest apartheid, something that would not come apart for decades more. And because England needed South Africa for gold and minerals, they did not want to piss off the government of South Africa, which was completely opposed to a white woman and a black woman being married in an adjacent country and ruling that country. You can't have that when you're the apartheid brain of South Africa. So you see all of that coming into play, and the British imperialism is just crushing to these people. The two British bureaucrats are played by Tom Felton, who you may know from the Harry Potter movies. He was Draco Malfoy. And Jack Davenport. The two of them are positively slimy as the two British bureaucrats who, with their upper crust disdain for all things African, take joy in pushing Soretse Khama around.
I still picture Tom Felton as a little kid. I'm guessing he's not.
He's not anymore. Okay, not anymore. But you know, when they talk in that upper crust British accent, they could be telling you, you're a lowly turd who wipe off the bottom of my shoe. And the way they say it with that upper crust accent, it doesn't seem, but what they're actually doing is sticking the knife in you and turning it. And so that's very interesting to see. By the way, the character that Jack Davenport plays, his wife is played by Jessica Oyelowo.
Oh, wow.
Who is David Oyelowo's white wife. So here she is in a movie in which her husband is starring as the black guy who married the white woman and causes problems, and she's the white woman married to that black guy. He's one of the producers of this movie, which I think means she slept with him to get the job.
Wait a minute.
I'm kidding about that. This whole thing was directed by a woman named Amma Asante, and she does a beautiful job. Two things I like about this very, very much are David Oyelowo's performance and also the fact that the story is not told through the eyes of the white person, or even by an outsider white person. There's a white reporter who's covering all of this sort of stuff in London and then in Botswana land. And it could very easily have been the story of the journalist who tells what's happening and reveals it to the world. No. This is about the love story between this man, who happens to be a king, and this woman, who happens to be of a different skin color than the king. Like Hidden Figures and Hacksaw Ridge, two of the best movies of the last year, this is one of those true stories that you never knew about. Mostly because we Americans, we don't learn African history.
We simply don't. We don't care about American history,
right,
let alone the rest of the world.
The only part of Africa we ever learned about was Egypt and Casablanca. That's it. When it came to Botswana land becoming Botswana land, which it did in 1966 and all that, we didn't learn any of this. And it's a wonderful story to have told, and it's very well told. Some people have called it a British version of Loving, which is a movie.
I was calling it English Loving before I saw it.
It came out, Loving was the movie that came out a few months ago, which was about this interracial couple in America that took their case to the Supreme Court and got rid of all the laws, the miscegenation laws, as they were called, that kept interracial marriage from happening in states like Virginia and elsewhere. This is much more than that. This is, like Loving, it's a love story between these two, but it's also about how they battled back against all these British imperialist forces and the forces within their own tribe that were rallied against them. And you know, in a movie like this, they're going to come out the winner in the end. I'm not spoiling anything for you, but it's how they get to that conclusion that really works. I really, really enjoyed United Kingdom. I'm giving it an 8.5, just like you gave to Get Out.
It's sort of flying under the radar right now. You're not hearing too much about United Kingdom. Hopefully, word of mouth is strong.
Yeah, I hope so. In much the same way that Hidden Figures had to start out that way, an untold story with African-Americans in the lead, and the same thing here. Now, I just want to say this about David Oyelowo. Here's a guy who, when was he nominated for Selma? Was that 2-3 years ago?
I'm going to say 3 years ago.
Okay. Yeah. Most people, once they get nominated for an Academy Award, they go off and get hired to do $25 million to $100 million movies. They get hired to do blockbusters. Mm-hmm. Look at what this guy has chosen to do since. Queen of Katwe, very small movie. Yes, it has the Disney imprint, but very small movie. Didn't do a huge box office. And a United Kingdom, which is also a small, independent movie, not going to get tons of box office. It's going to do well, and I urge you to go see it. But it's interesting to me that he's decided to use that power not just to enrich himself, but also to give jobs to female directors. Both of those movies I mentioned, Mira Nair and Amma Asante, both women who directed these things, and also to produce these stories with his new power, if you will, in Hollywood. to tell these kind of stories instead of going off and being in Transformers 5.
And you could say the same for Rosamund Pike as well, who was nominated for Gone Girl.
Yes.
And she's doing movies like this.
Yeah. So it's really good. It's called A United Kingdom, 8.5 out of 10. Now, our third movie for this week is something called Rock Dog, which you saw. I haven't. All I know is it's an animated movie. Does that mean it's for kids?
It is for kids. It's for families. It's you and I both, Paul, we go see a fair amount of screenings, and usually at scary films or adult films, R-rated films, we always see people bringing their kids.
Yeah.
And it's the most dreadful thing in the world. It really upsets me.
Yeah.
So anytime there's a halfway decent family film, I'm going to recommend it, because people always want to know what to do that weekend with their kids. But I almost didn't see Rock Dog, because I watched the trailer, and quite frankly, it's a very bad trailer. And they screened it on a Saturday morning. I was making breakfast for my 5-year-old Oscar, and I had the trailer on. I said, hey, this is screening today. What do you think? And he goes, yeah, Dad, let's go see it. So I said, okay, fine. So I took the kid. One of the more pleasant surprises I've had in a movie theater was watching Rock Dog.
Wow.
Which I am going to recommend. I thought it's a very funny and engaging family film with memorable characters, which is not something you can say for the last film that I took Oscar to see, which was Trolls, which relied heavily on a soundtrack and had very bright colors, but nothing really to write home about. As a matter of fact, Oscar got so bored at that one that we just left instead of finishing out that movie. So Rock Dog is something that we haven't seen too much of. It is a Chinese production that farmed out the animation to an American studio.
What?
Which is sort of the reverse of
that
what's
is.
Been happening forever. So the company who did the animation for smaller budget movies like Book of Life did the animation here, and it is the worst thing about the movie is that the animation's quite frankly not very good. It's computer generated, and it looks like circa 2000 computer generated stuff like Shrek and Chicken Little, and that's I think what's going to keep some people away from it is it looks like it has a very low budget. It's actually the most expensive animated film ever produced completely in China. But again, it doesn't have that same slick feel as a Toy Story or, you know, an Ice Age movie even. But it makes up for it with, again, a clever script and, I think, engaging characters. It's based on a Chinese graphic novel called Tibetan Rock Dog, which was written by this alternative rock and roller from the 90s over in China. And he wrote this book. And it's your standard Follow Your Dreams movie, which is always good for kids to see. It's a young mastiff who's growing up in this snowy Tibetan mountain who he wants to follow in his dad's paw steps to protect the village of sheep from the surrounding wolves until, in a nod to The Gods Must Be Crazy of all movies, a radio falls out of the sky and he hears rock and roll. And something I liked about the movie, too, is he didn't hear like the Beatles or he didn't hear the Stones. It's original music in this movie. And I like that a lot, too. It's some sound alike songs, you know, to get you in the rock and roll mood. But he decides to play guitar and go to the city and find Angus Scattergood, voiced by Eddie Izzard, who is a great British comic. I'm sure you know who that is,
yes.
Paul. He is clearly having a ball saying the word twit as many times as he can in a family film.
Okay. Because
he knows it's just a little inappropriate. But yeah, Angus Scattergood is this cat who's fallen on hard times. Will he ever be able to write a hit again? Boy, I wonder if the dog will be able to help him out. You know where the story is going to go, but it's funny. And it's just a fun movie that I think it'll do no business at all. And it was actually a flop in China because a rival film studio put the pressure on other theater chains, and they barely showed it. So they've lost their shirt on this. The director is the guy who co-directed Toy Story 2, so he's pretty good at storytelling here. I'd hope this movie does well, and it's not going to. Nobody's going to go see Rock Dog. I'm kind of upset about it, Paul.
Maybe this is one of those movies that'll have a life on home video.
I think it will. I think that when parents use a movie as a babysitter and they say, fine, watch Rock Dog, it'll get viewed a million times, and it might even, in 20 or so years, become a bit of a cult classic. So I don't want to oversell it. It's not the best animated film of the year. It's nowhere near as good as Moana or Kubo and the Two Strings or Zootopia. But for a movie that I thought I was going to just despise, for a movie that I thought was going to be cheap, and it turns out it's sophisticated and funny, and they even they play a Radiohead song in this movie. So come on, that's just cause for applause. I would give Rock Dog, I would give it a solid 8, right below Get Out.
Wow,
that's how much I enjoyed Rock
Dog. Did Oscar laugh?
he not only laughed, but he has been talking about the movie all week.
Well, that's the mark of a successful kid movie.
Absolutely.
If the kid's talking about it.
He's a harsh critic. Let me tell you what.
I wonder why. All right. Those are the three movies for this week. We'll take a break. We'll come back and tell you who's going to win at the Oscars on Sunday night right after this on the Big 550 KTRS. This is the Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon on the Big 550 KTRS. I am Paul Harris. Ian and Dan are both off today, so Tim and Max are filling in. And this is our weekly showbiz segment. We've already reviewed three movies, one of which is Jordan Peele's horror movie called Get Out, which Max gave an 8.5. And then David Oyelowo and Rosamund Pike in A United Kingdom, which I gave an 8.5. And Max also gave an 8 out of 10 to Rock Dog, a new animated movie. I'm sorry, what?
That's way too high. I'm just excited about Rock Dog. It's probably too high.
Do you want to revise your number?
This would probably be, you know, a 6.5 or 7.
Really. All right. We're going to put it down as a 6.5 then. You're allowed to revise these things. Now let's talk about the Academy Awards, which are coming up on Sunday night. Actually, before they do that, the Razzie Awards are going to be handed out tomorrow night. The Worst Picture nominees. Tell me which one of these you would pick. Don't predict the winner, but which of these would you pick? Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice, Dirty Grandpa, Gods of Egypt, Hillary's America, or Independence Day Resurgence? I only saw one of those.
I would have to pick Dirty Grandpa, which is really one of the worst comedies I've seen, and mainly because they cast De Niro as an aging old grandpa who, as the movie goes on, becomes like sort of a badass and hard drinker and womanizer. But it's De Niro.
Yeah.
We've seen him do all of this stuff before. It's not shocking. They really should have cast somebody else.
You know, when the history of Robert De Niro is written long after his death, people are going to write a big, long story on how many really, 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 really bad career choices he made. You know, The Adventures of Boris and Natasha,
sure.
The Bad Dirty Grandpa, the one he made recently that I reviewed a couple of weeks ago, Comedian. Terrible.
I will say, though, I don't mean to 86 the segment about the Razzies, and perhaps this will add to it, I hate the Razzies.
Why?
Because I think that there have been great movies over the years, including The Shining, that were nominated for Razzies because they didn't do well at the box office. And I think some of it becomes like, oh, this was a failure. Like Batman v Superman is a failure, but that doesn't mean it should belongs on that list.
Oh, I disagree. I disagree. That would be my choice because when it comes to these...
I think they go too much on box office is my point.
Oh, okay.
Instead of actual decent movies.
Well, Batman v Superman made a lot of money. It just didn't make as much money as it needed to be considered a success. Made a lot more money than Dirty Grandpa and Independence
and
Day
Hillary's
Resurgence.
America, yes.
The thing about the Batman versus Superman Dawn of Justice is that there are expectations you have for those kind of movies. You know, I don't watch any movie with Adam Sandler or Rob Schneider or, you know, people like that. I just don't even bother going to see those movies because I know they're going to be Drek and they would be on my worst movies of the year list. So they don't even qualify as having tried to make a decent movie. I think with Batman versus Superman, DC Comics was trying to make a good movie, but they failed miserably. And so it was on my worst of the year list.
It's the most high profile of those, so it probably will win the Razzie because it's more of a news story if that wins than if Dirty Grandpa wins.
That's true. Now, about the Academy Awards, which will be on Sunday night, hosted by Jimmy Kimmel, who I think will probably do a pretty good job.
I think so, too.
Yeah, he's hosted a lot of other award shows, and he's good at standing in front of people and telling jokes.
He'll be just fine.
Got a full-time job doing that. So let's start with the big one, Best Picture. You got La La Land, Moonlight, Manchester by the Sea, Arrival, Fences, Lion, Hidden Figures, Hacksaw Ridge, Hell or High Water. This is the first year in a couple of years where I've actually seen every one of the nominees because there were some times when, you know, two movies were showing at the same time or I was on vacation and didn't see them. This time I've seen all of them. What do you think is going to win?
Yeah, I think the only competition that La La Land has is Moonlight. I think that, the great YouTube channel called Honest Trailers did a honest trailer for the Oscars. And when they focused on Moonlight, they said it checked all of the Oscars boxes. You know, it's a depressing story. It's based on a play. It's got amazing acting.
So a gay black kid.
Yes, exactly. And so I do think that Moonlight's a very strong picture. It was in my top 10 last year. I think it's the only competition La La Land has. That being said, La La Land's going to win Best Picture.
Yeah, I agree. And by the way, I was not enamored of Moonlight.
Really?
Yeah, I thought it was actually kind of boring, but I think La La Land is going to run away with it. So best actress in a leading role, you got Natalie Portman for Jackie, Emma Stone for La La Land, Isabelle Huppert for Elle, Meryl Streep should not have been nominated this year for Florence Foster Jenkins, Amy Adams should have been in that slot, and Ruth Negga for Loving, which we mentioned in the last segment. Does anybody give Emma Stone any competition in this category?
Unfortunately, you know, if I was the dictator of the Oscars, I think this award belongs to Natalie Portman. I think that her performance equals her work in Black Swan. I think that it's a phenomenal performance with a very difficult role of an American icon. But I think that Isabelle Huppert, who has been doing great on the awards circuit, if you follow all the other awards shows except for the Critics' Choice Awards, which went to Portman, Isabelle's been winning. I could see her winning the Oscar here. It's between Isabelle and Emma Stone. I don't dislike Emma Stone. I remember seeing Easy A years ago going, wow, who is this actress? She's amazing. She was great in Superbad. I think La La Land should win Best Picture. I love La La Land. I don't know why she is nominated for Best
Actress. Okay, I'm going to explain it to you.
And if she wins, which she's the favorite, I think it's robbing it from under Portman's nose.
Okay. I liked Portman's performance as well. I praised it. I did not see the Isabelle Huppert movie.
Which is not nominated for foreign, which is interesting.
Yeah, but there's a scene in La La Land that as soon as the scene was over, not even before when the movie was over, when this scene was over, I said, give her the Oscar.
I know the scene you're talking.
It's the scene early on when her character goes to an audition. She's a struggling young actress in Hollywood, and she goes to an audition, and she's asked to do a speech from this movie that she's auditioning for, and the scene doesn't even last 60 seconds. And in that 60 seconds, Emma Stone goes from happy to sad to angry to befuddled to now then upset because a phone rings in the room and the people she's auditioning for, they're not paying attention to her. And so she ends up frustrated by that. But the emotions that she's going to as she's auditioning for that role prove to me this is a great young actress and deserves the Academy Award for that. That should be the clip. Sunday night, just roll that and then give her the Oscar.
Yeah, it would satiate a lot of people that say, oh, that's right, that was a really good scene. She has said that that's not too far off from things that have happened to her in real life, where people are on the phone, people aren't paying attention. You're pouring your heart out.
Yeah, somebody brings in a sandwich for the producer. Thank you very much. Go ahead. Don't worry about us. Really? Don't worry about you? I'm trying to get a job. I can't pay my rent. You're 6 feet away from me and you're talking. Just an impossible situation, and she, I think, does it brilliantly. Now, for Best Actor, her co-star Ryan Gosling is up against Casey Affleck in Manchester by the Sea, Denzel Washington in Fences, Andrew Garfield in Hacksaw Ridge, and Viggo Mortensen in the worst named but best movie I saw last year with a horrible name, Captain Fantastic, a movie that I hope people are going to discover on video because they did not see it in the theaters. Who's going to win there?
I think it's Denzel Washington's Academy Award to lose. He'll be the first black actor to win three. And I think he's phenomenal in the movie. And I know that Casey Affleck is the fan favorite for Manchester by the Sea, but I think Denzel's going to carry it away.
I think you're right. For Best Supporting Actress in a Supporting Role, do we have to mention anybody else but Viola Davis, who's a lock as Denzel Washington's co-star in Fences?
I think that early on, a lot was made about Michelle Williams, and she does have my favorite scene in Manchester by the Sea when she's asking Casey Affleck's character to go to lunch, and it made me break down in tears watching that scene. Mm-hmm. But no, it's Viola Davis. I think both her and Denzel win for.
See, I would have given this to Octavia Spencer in Hidden Figures because that's a supporting performance. Viola Davis is a starring role.
Yes,
she co-stars with Denzel Washington in Fences,
and that's why they put her in this category so she would win.
Yes, you're right. What about supporting actor? You've got Jeff Bridges in Hell or High Water, Lucas Hedges in Manchester by the Sea, Dev Patel in Lion, Michael Shannon in one of the worst movies of the year. I think I called it my worst movie of the year, Nocturnal Animals, and Mahershala Ali in Moonlight.
I think it's Ali's role. I think it's Ali's award, rather, to win. I did like Lucas Hedges a whole lot in Manchester by the Sea. I despised Nocturnal Animals. It's a bad movie, and Michael Shannon, obviously very talented actor. I hope he doesn't win for this, only because I don't want anybody to say, oh, you know, that movie won an Oscar. I better go rent it, because it's a horrible movie.
Horrible. I used to say I would watch Amy Adams read a book. Well, that movie is about Amy Adams reading a book, and it sucks.
Wrong.
I was wrong.
Well, Mahershala Ali is the heart of Moonlight, which is amazing, because if you've seen the movie, he's not in the whole movie. And I know that's fine, because it's a supporting role, but the shadow he casts is over that whole movie. I think he's great.
Yeah, by the way, I would not give it to Jeff Bridges, because once again, he mumbles through the movie. He's been doing this for 10 years. He's got to knock it off. Lucas Hedges, Manchester by the Sea. He's okay.
Yeah, he's
fine. Dev Patel in Lion. I would have given that slot to the kid in Lion.
Yep.
The young boy who grows up to be Dev Patel.
Right.
The kid is tremendous.
It breaks your heart.
Absolutely. I hope, you know what? They're going to have the two of them present together on Sunday night, right?
Or maybe if Dev wins, he brings him up on stage.
Dev's not going to win. Mahershala Ali is going to take it. All right, so best director. You got the directors of La La Land, Moonlight, Arrival, Manchester by the Sea, and Hacksaw Ridge, which means Mel Gibson is nominated for best director at the Academy Awards 10 years after he was a pariah in Hollywood.
Because of that fact, because it's Mel's coming out party, I actually think he's the dark horse here, and I could see them giving it to Mel Gibson. I know that would be an upset, but there always is a big upset. You know, nobody saw Mark Rylance winning for Best Supporting Actor for Bridge of Spies. Mm-hmm. Everybody thought that was Stallone's award to win. I could see it being a big moment for him. To me, it's between Damien Chazelle for La La Land and Barry Jenkins for Moonlight. If they're not going to split the award, then Damien wins for directing and picture.
I agree. I think Damien Chazelle is going to win it. It's his vision. He wrote the thing. He, you know, everything you see on the screen is what came out of his creativity. It's the biggest project of the year, pulled off brilliantly, and I think he's going to win that. Okay, a couple of other categories we're going to get to. Best Animated Feature Film, Zootopia, Kubo and the Two Strings, Moana, The Red Turtle, and My Life as a Zucchini. You know what's missing here? Pixar. Finding Dory didn't get a nomination.
Yeah, it's a little surprising that Finding Dory, which I think is one of Pixar's stronger sequels.
Yes.
It's actually quite a good film.
Much better than The Good Dinosaur.
Much better than Cars 2.
Yeah.
Now, Red Turtle has recently opened here in St. Louis. There's still a chance for you to go see it. My Life is a Zucchini. Not only has nobody seen it, but I'm not even sure it's screened here in St. Louis.
If it was, it didn't get all the way to the wall.
This is really a two-picture race. As much as I love Moana, and I know it's nominated for a couple of Oscars for song because of Lin-Manuel Miranda, it's really between Zootopia and Kubo. Zootopia, because of the cultural commentary and because of the movie itself, it's fantastic, seemed like a steamroller that nobody could beat. And if you look at all of these awards groups over the past couple of months, Kubo has been winning almost every single one, including the Annie Awards, which are just voted on by the Animation Guild, who, of course, will be voting at the Oscars as well.
Right.
I think that this is actually going to be an upset. I think it's Kubo and the Two Strings.
All right, last category we're going to mention here. Well, I just want to throw one thing in. If you have an Oscar ballot at work and you're just filling it out before you go home for the weekend, here's one that you have to put down as a lock.
Uh-oh.
In the best visual effects category, The Jungle Book.
Yes.
There's no competition for that.
At all.
100% locked, more so than Viola Davis.
It's maybe one of the, it's probably the most visually striking film I've ever seen.
Yeah, and it was in my top 10 for the year. It's very, very good movie. But the last category we got to cover is Best Documentary, a category that I cannot believe Wiener is not in. And Wiener, by the way, is showing on some cable channels and is also streaming now on Netflix. I don't know if it's on Amazon Prime, but if you did not see that movie, that is one of the most devastating political documentaries of all time, with the coming apart of Anthony Wiener and his wife, Huma Abedin.
It's one of those documentaries where they were trying to shoot one thing and then something else kept happening.
Yeah, you can't believe that they allowed them to be in the room with the cameras while these things were happening. But that's not nominated, surprisingly. Though here are the ones that are: O.J. Made in America, 13th, I Am Not Your Negro, Fire at Sea, and one of these that I really liked that not many people saw, Life Animated. What do you think is going to win?
Well, for the St. Louis Film Critics, I Am Not Your Negro won, and of course, the 13th has a huge following as well. Life Animated is a devastating, devastating movie. I thought it was devastating.
Devastating with a good message.
Uplifting. Yes, but just the overall, just the point of the, I don't know,
it's about a kid with autism who
connects through
Disney movies.
Yes. I think O.J. Made in America is going to win because of its 7-hour length. And yes, this had qualifying theatrical runs, but people have actually watched this and they've watched it at home.
On ESPN.
And because of that, it will win because the documentary voters be like, oh, I've seen that. And so I think that O.J. Made in America will win.
All right, there you go. Our Oscar picks for Sunday night. One other thing I want to mention before we go here, and that is that the St. Louis Symphony Orchestra is going to be doing something at Powell Symphony Hall later on this month. They're going to be showing Raiders of the Lost Ark and playing the score along with the movie. I have seen them do this with several movies. I went to see them play The Godfather. I went to see them play two Charlie Chaplin movies, Modern Times and City Lights. If you've never experienced that, it's a unique opportunity to see one of the world's great orchestras playing along with some of the greatest movies ever made. Here's the only thing I will tell you. It's going to be in March. I think they're doing a weekend of the 17th through 19th. If you do go, every once in a while, try not to look at the screen and look down at these world caliber musicians who are playing the music for you live. Don't take it for granted. But go do it. Everybody should do it at least once in their St. Louis life. That's the showbiz stuff for this week. Next hour, the Harris Challenge and knuckleheads in the news.